Good morning, Brother John.
Good morning, Jerry.
I hear background noise. Well, where are you?
I'm on location here in the bustling little suburb of Creve Coeur, Missouri, at the Starbucks, just sipping on some Java juice that I'm and adding a little bit of my vanilla creamer. And
the legendary, kind of, legendary vanilla creamer that we're all aware of.
Oh,
in your family.
Yeah, I kind of doctor up my coffee, or as most people say, I ruin my coffee. but that's okay. So here
it
we
is
are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
50 degrees, drizzly. It's a kind of. It's sort of kind of. Starbucks is Seattle, and this is a Seattle day here. Yeah.
Yeah, 62 instead of 50, whatever. But same kind of weather. What are you wearing, buddy?
Oh, original. I'm an original guy. I like to go the original route.
Well, hey, guess what? I'm original today, too. The first one we ever did, it's black, and it's white with a little bit of yellow and print. And, wow, yeah, this is something. We're both sporting the same T-shirt.
Very good.
Yeah. I think we're as right as rain, since it is kind of raining.
It is.
We've got something today. We've got a tiger by the tail here, and
it's an interesting story. It's one that if you're living in a cave, you might not know about, but other than that, you probably do. But we'll just give you a little bit of the background.
Yeah.
Right now, we know about the Me Too has kind of gone another direction in a very big way, and that is that we've got the women gymnast. That have been over, they had 150 women gymnasts testify against Dr. Larry Nassar, detailing the sexual abuse that they had been going through over a period spanning probably a good 8, 9, 10 years. And it was, and this fella, as everybody probably knows, was already sentenced in November to 60 years based upon finding over 37 files of 37,000 files of child pornography. So, and then of course, add on to that the up to 175 he got just a couple days ago for the abuse that he did with
just to be accurate, the girls did not, the 150 did not testify, they allocated. In other words, they wanted statements from the victims, and it took 4 days.
It's amazing because this is a kind of a new, fairly new thing that is considered quite controversial because it's done before the sentencing, and quite often there's some people who feel that it might create a bias, and other people feel it's just part of what needs to be done to basically provide the victims with an opportunity to start on the road to some emotional well-being that they richly deserve. So,
well, also... Also, since, oddly enough, Mary Jane and I are in the middle of a similar process with the fella who ran down our son and killed him, we're going to be at his trial at the 31st, and we've been asked to allocute also, and all of Joe's friends have been notified by us and told if they want to come down there and read or say their statements or send them into the court, either way they can. And what it does is it's done right before sentencing, and in some cases it does affect the sentencing that's already been negotiated and agreed upon. Sometimes it can go worse as the judge hears this stuff. In this case, I think it didn't affect the sentencing much, but the judge was in tears when she read her statement for this particular trial with Larry Nassar.
So, and just to kind of go a little bit further in the background,
let's
of
pull
this
it back.
Story,
let's pull
this,
it back.
This whole thing broke back in August of 2016 when the Indianapolis Star reporter decided to look into some complaints that had been made that abuses actually didn't get into the details of some of the trainers was what the story started out, and there was actually a full article done on it. And guess what happens? Of course, it said people start calling into the reporter and said, "You think you got a story? I got a much better story to tell you." And sure enough, he found out about the doctor. He then goes to interview the doctor, and, well, the rest is history, as it all unfolded and now is finally coming to an end in terms of the trial. But unfortunately, we know for these women, the end will never come. That's the sad truth.
If you have, we're going to have a link in the show notes, and I strongly recommend you read this New York Times article that we've referenced, because it goes into quite a bit of detail. And the one thing that kind of struck me, John, was when they're over in, I think it's Europe, at some Olympic event, and they don't know who the doctor's going to be. And then it's announced who it's going to be. And all these girls went, oh my God, my tormentor, my abuser is on his way here. So we've got to do that in addition to the Olympics.
Wow.
I know. Can you imagine?
See, that's, I think as we take, what we're going to do is we're going to give you a little background on the, women's gymnastics is a sport that has just come out of nowhere in the past probably 40 years to become, U.S. has become the, by far the greatest, you know, the winners, the champions in this regard. And along with that, of course, comes some popularity. So, the fact is the key player here, the one that really took the severe hit, well, actually a couple did, but the one we're going to talk about is Gymnastics USA. And USA Gymnastics, and they started in 1963, with, you know, just a fledgling organization, a 501c3, to promote the, you know, the training, et cetera, for
nonprofit.
These kids.
That means nonprofit.
Yeah, 501c3 nonprofit organization. So they went from about 7,000 athletes in the 60s to over 148,000 as we speak today, supported by 25,000 professionals that can be mostly trainers that have a local network of over 4,000 facilities. So,
wow.
That is, we're throwing out some pretty big numbers, and to make it even bigger than that,
we're
just talking about members, and members are what we would call the athletes in the organization are the very serious ones. So we're also talking about the fact that there's a lot of other participants, and there's over 5 million gymnasts.
Wow.
So the numbers we've thrown out, 148 athletes.
40,000.
And the 5 million represent all the athletes. They're not just women. But I can tell you right now that this is a woman-dominated sport. I mean, well over 50% of the participants in this sport are women. So that's what we're talking about. You know, we've got ourselves 70 elite athletes on the national team, women athletes on the national women's team. But you have to understand that this works its way down through a tremendous number of women. And that's, I think, going to be one of the points we're going to make, is the population we're dealing with here. It's just not those elite athletes. It goes far, far beyond that.
Yeah, these are big numbers. And also, we should note that the first thing you said, you know, this is a relatively new and young group. 1963. Mm-hmm. 7,000 athletes.
Yes.
That's a humble beginning, as you said. And that probably is right when this thing kind of started, early 60s. People were inspired at that time. Remember, let's frame it. JFK was president. Ask not what you can do. What you can do for your country. And so people started thinking that way. And that's, I think, when the U.S. got serious about making this one of their things. And a thing it became. It got massive. It got there. I think that's pretty quick myself to get those numbers that quickly. And we did a lot of digging on this episode. And, you know, part of that was I had a contact who was involved in some of this as a parent. And, you know, we kind of did our deep throat sort of thing where he didn't want any personal stuff mentioned and stuff like that. And I appreciate that. But he gave me a lot of background on how it worked at one of the facilities. And it's a facility that is massive and is really in, at the heart of a lot of this stuff. So
we're it's kind of amazing because you see, we kind of accidentally all of a sudden ran into each other as we figured out that we were talking about the same facility, because the facility, this one in Texas, and I realized when I was looking through the list, the roster list, I said, wow, this facility, this gym down in Texas, has got two of the top, 20 women gymnasts in it. And then all of a sudden, I mentioned the name of it, and you said, yikes, that's the same one. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, we found that out 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's how scary it is.
We've been digging. Needless to say,
We'll be talking a little bit more about in terms of how the culture of these clubs and what that's all about. But you know, when we talk about this popularity, the popularity of the sport is it can be attributed to the success of the sport, and it's amazing how I there's certain Olympic events that captivate the public, and there's others that are, just kind of in the background. And the fact is that gymnastics is one that has really captivated the public, because we're dealing with these girls who are so young. I mean, when you think of the Olympics, you typically think of at the youngest would be 20. Well, if you're 20 years old and you're a gymnast, your career is practically
done.
Over with.
You're done.
You're talking about girls that are probably 14, 15, 16 years old competing at the highest levels. So what we find here is that the United States, back in 1984, for the first time, their team won a medal, and a young woman by the name of Mary Lou Retton put the U.S. on the map in terms of this sport by winning the first gold medal for a U.S. for an individual event.
That is correct.
Since then, what's happened is that the U.S. team has medaled. Their team has medaled in every Olympic since 1992, including getting the gold in 2012 and 2016. So that success that started back in 1984 has continued to play its way all the way up to current times. And, you also have other events, international events. And since 1991... the USA has been able to win 11 medals in world championship competition, which typically takes place on off years when we don't have the Olympics.
Right.
So I think what we have, we've got a tremendous amount of success. You've got a sport that captivates the public. And when you see U.S. doing well in it, that's all it takes for you all of a sudden to have, like, everybody looks at it and says, wow, we got to be part of this. And that's what basically those two things together create what we have in terms of the popularity. So
winning does tend to put a focus on a group, and people get pretty nationalistic, pretty patriotic when the Olympics roll around. They have a team to root for, they have a country to root for, and it's exciting. People like the Olympics. People like to watch, and there's no doubt about it. And whether you're talking about the miracle back in 19,
with the hockey,
or, people really get worked up. And sometimes it can turn around the psychology of a country. And I think in the case of the hockey game, it did.
I think sport that's in the horizon that everybody's hoping that will do that for, it's a fairly successful sport, is soccer with the World Cup.
Right.
That's one where everybody's saying if the U.S. could just get into the finals or do something, it would just spur them on, because right now although soccer is getting a lot more popular, that if it ever, was seriously contending for the World Cup, it would become a big time player, no doubt.
Yeah, it would make a noise that would be heard all around the world. I mean, we love baseball and football and basketball and all our little American sports and what have you, but soccer is the big time worldwide. That is the deal.
Well,
so that would be huge.
The,
you're right.
The thing about the women's gymnastic, it's comparable to soccer, is the fact is that size isn't that a critical effect. That being small it works to your favor in gymnastics versus a lot of sports. In most sports, being bigger works to your favor, such as football, basketball, baseball even, etc. So here we have a sport where the smaller you are, is going to be actually successful. And that is one of the things we'll talk later on, is kind of a little bit to
when
the
we talk about the movie.
When we get to the movie.
So, hey, you know, John, well, I got a question for you. So, like, when does it, for, I'm a young girl. I show promise of being a gymnast somehow. When do they start looking at me? When do they start thinking, let's groom her? What age?
The age of 7 is really kind of a critical age.
Wait a minute. You said 7?
Yeah, like after 6, like 7. And it's amazing when you look at some of the success stories.
That's
where,
second grade.
That's second grade. Exactly. And this is something that's very formal. USA Gymnastics, which is the organization right now that's on the hot seat, what they do is they make a point about the fact that we have a program that basically allows us to start profiling and identifying elite talent by starting to test them, you know, at a local level, local testing, and then going up through national testing that starts at the age of 7. So, you know, it just seems so young.
Now, this is done through women. The clubs? This is done through the clubs?
It's done through the clubs, but it's administered by the national group, the USA Gymnastics. They're the ones who basically have the different things you do in terms of the physical testing that's done in order to try to identify these. So actually what happens then is that since the clubs play such an important part, there are, you know, the clubs kind of promote themselves. They build themselves up. They pride themselves in the kinds of competition. So, you know, winning is everything. That's unfortunately the mindset of the U.S. And so what they do is they strive, work hard. They work, you know, with the athletes. They develop athletes in order to make them successful. Because parents want to put their kids into programs that are going to give them an opportunity to move up the ladder. And I also think a point that we want to make is that although it isn't another big plus, but you know, everybody, you know, we're talking a national team of 70 women out of 148,000 members. So that's a pretty small group of, but there is another little bit bigger group. And the fact is that the Gymnastics USA also likes to promote the idea that there are programs out there, college programs, so that there right now are about 80, there are 80 schools that have women's gymnastics, and they give out about 1,500 scholarships. So there's another little carrot, but again, it's still a pretty small number of people get these. So
I don't think the participants, I think that they use that to justify the hours and hours and the dollars, and these are big dollars these parents spend on these clubs.
Yes, there's a big investment. Yes.
Yeah, thousands of dollars a month. So this is not cheap. And if you happen to belong to one of those clubs that has their own high school and your child is also enrolled in the high school, then you're paying for a private high school. And the ones that don't have high schools, I think almost all have tutors. So that, again, you can increase the focus, increase the emphasis that you want with the child, and you know, if you looked at this a year ago, you would have said, wow, what a program. That's really amazing. Yeah. But now, if you look at the same data, you would go, oh my God, you know, this is a hotbed for predators. And we'll get into that.
Well,
that's what it is.
I think, you know, what we're going to do is that this problem, well, first thing is, I just want to kind of emphasize again that I've always been captivated by this sport. When I take a look at the Olympics, I can probably pick 5 sports that I really kind of latch onto. I like, you know, I when it comes to women's sports, I like women, volleyball, and I like the women gymnastics. I think what I like about them the most is the fact that these are two sports in which if you had men do the same thing, you couldn't tell the difference. In other words,
no advantage.
Excel. In fact, I would think with volleyball, you can't tell the difference, but there might be. I'm convinced that women gymnasts are probably physically and do much better than men.
Oh, so yeah, physique.
Yeah, the physique just really gives them a decided advantage to make their sport.
So, I agree. That's a big plus. That's a big plus we should point out. There's a lot of positives to this whole thing. And discipline is a good thing. Belonging to a group is a good thing. Learning at an early age how to get what you want through a program, a system, and all, those are all good things. And you know, also, for women, this is something I can do better than a man. That's a good thing. So,
I want to point out that this is also, this is a basic sport, which require, it's a very transferable thing. So, in other words, the exercises and the preparation you do for this are going to create a much better overall athlete that can then pursue perhaps other sports.
Yeah, true.
That's the thing that they like to sell with Gymnastics USA, that this is a transferable skill.
Yep. So. Agreed. Totally agree. So let's, I think we framed it nicely. We've talked about what the sport is. The good and some of the good and some of the bad, you know, we haven't really gotten into the nitty gritty, which we'll start to do now. Let's talk a little about a film. We did find a film, a Lifetime Network film, Perfect Body, it's called. And it's 1 hour and 28 minutes. It's, if you want to legitimately watch this movie, you will have to pay $100 to get the DVD. However,
sounds like a deal breaker.
However, you can watch it for free on YouTube.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good quality too. I mean, we're not talking some grainy
Lifetime.
Thing that somebody. Yeah, it's the real thing. So
it's not grainy.
I would say that, you know, here we've got a problem that's being publicized in terms of the gymnastics, the women's gymnastics. This is a problem that is brought forth in this thing. It's a very specific problem, but a very serious problem that was brought up in the 1990s, and I'm not so sure that it can't help but continue to be somewhat of a problem, just upon the nature of the way that we look at these women, and so
So the problem is not sexual abuse. No, that's not the problem that's highlighted here. Unlike the main story that everybody's thinking about, this is another problem, and that is, if you're lighter, you can go higher. When you're swinging around on those bars, you can go faster. You can do everything better. And so very often, it seems, one of the things that happens when you start today is they pull out the scales and you stand on them as one of these young girls. And the coach or trainer tells you exactly what your weight is and how much weight you've got to lose. And it can get in the movie. You see this right away, comes up almost immediately. And this girl is 5 feet tall in the movie, and she's got to lose 8 pounds because she's, what, 100 pounds, 102 pounds, something like that?
Yes.
She's got to get into the 90s, and I can tell you, that is light.
Yeah, that's pretty light stuff.
How's she going to get there?
I would say that the physical setting in which this weighing is done is you are there with your peers that are watching the scale along with your trainer or the head of the club. So it's like you are being if you don't come in at that weight, you feel
you're being outed.
You're outed. You're embarrassed.
How many girls like to talk about their weight?
Weight is a sensitive subject already.
Yes.
Jeez.
So now it's going to be announced to the entire club, your peers, and as time marches on and you're in this club for a while, this becomes your world. You're in a bubble. This is your culture. This is your peer group. These are your colleagues. These are your teammates. These are your best buddies because you're spending enormous numbers of hours a day. You'll probably start at 5 a.m. and you'll go to school and then you'll have lunch during which you'll probably skip it because of your weight and do your homework. And then by the way, we have deep background on this to verify. And then you'll go straight from school back to the club that you've already spent three hours in the morning and stay till 9 at night. Wow. And if you're going for the regionals or the sectionals or whatever, you know, toward the Olympics, you're going to be doing this on weekends also. That's a lot, John.
It is a lot. And so as a result, what happens?
That's all in the movie. All this.
And so it really kind of, some of the things we've learned about the way these clubs operate, a lot of it is, you see it in the movie, the way that they are. First thing is that the girls are kind of isolated from their regular friends to the extent that it creates a severe hardship on their relationships and basically is making them isolated. And it's very easy for them to get split and separate from what I would call the real teen world.
They get culled from the herd.
Yes. So
very quickly.
That's one of the things. But of course, what we have here is we've got anorexia is what the disease is. And of course, we know this is a very, very serious disease. I mean, this is something which you think, well, kids are getting thin, but this is health. This is life threatening stuff.
And it's addictive.
Yes.
They can't stop. And they even want to stop and they can't stop, just like heroin. Different effect, of course.
We've learned, of course, about the celebrities who've run this. Most notable is probably Karen Carpenter, the singer. And but in this sports business, specifically this specific group, it is a big problem, which came out in the 1990s. You could Google and you could read a bunch of articles about how pervasive this problem was back then. That's what they were looking at in terms of the big problem in this industry. So
just to be specific, what we're talking about here is these girls have to get to a certain weight and keep it, but to get the approval of their trainers and coaches, and to an extent to belong to the group. You're young, you're a little girl, and you need this. You need this badly, and there is tremendous pressure on you to do this, to make your weight. And so what happens is you either don't eat very much at all compared to the amount of effort you're putting into this. I'm talking calories here. You're not going to be able to consume as many calories as you need in order to output the number of calories you need to do what you need to do every day. Remember those long hours. So what happens?
Yes.
Well, You crave the taste of food, but then as soon as it gets in your stomach, you feel it's like a bowling ball and it's going to weigh you down, and that needs to leave immediately. And you go into the bathroom, you stick your fingers down your throat, and you throw up.
Ooh.
That's what we're talking about here. And that becomes addictive.
So I think this movie it's got some real pluses to it, which I think we need to point out. And that is, I think it does a pretty good job of showing the environment in which we have talked about already, the high pressure that you have in terms of a strong club that deals strictly with gymnastics. It shows a pretty balanced approach in terms of the parents versus the coach, in terms of their talking back and forth, the issues of responsibility that each of them have in terms of the athlete. It does a good job of showing this isolation that can exist. And when you become a part of a group and you feel the intense pressure, it also shows that you can have what effect it has upon not only your body, but also your performance, to the extent that you just eventually break down. And that's all there.
You can't keep doing it because you're not getting enough calories and you're getting high. You get high from this, you know, and it showed this girl, you can tell right before she was going to have a problem is that her vision would start to go, the axes of her horizontal axes for her vision started to go. The left dropped and the right went up. She couldn't see the bar and she had to hit these bars at tremendous speeds with her hands. So that was just a recipe for disaster. And what they don't show, there's several things about this movie that are great, and we've already talked about those, not great in the sense that they highlight the problem. It is a very hard movie for some people to watch. It was extremely hard for me to watch. I was not comfortable. I was dreading it every second. went by so slowly for me that I was wondering if I could get through it. I don't like watching these kinds of things. And so, but I watched because I am a podcaster, John.
Okay. So, you took one for the team.
I did. And so went through this thing. What they don't show is there's two things that stand out to me. Number one, size. Oh, well, John, you're the one who pointed out the size. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
The thing about it is that the normal height that you would see for a gymnast would be around 5 feet, 5 feet one, 5 feet two. What's amazing about this movie, and I think it does a good job with it being fairly authentic in terms of the actual things you see in terms of the different physical feats that make up, you know, on the bar, you know, all the different things they have to do. And the other thing is, the problem is that there is a couple of the women that are in it that are much too big. You would never see. They're way too tall. And I think that they did that to sell the movie because they didn't want just a bunch of pixies, you know, running around. Although the main person, Amy
is a pixie.
Jo Johnson, is 5'2". She was a gymnast through the age of 17. And that's what makes the film fairly authentic, is having the star of the movie, the one who suffers the anorexia, be an actual gymnast. And she later goes on. She then became an actress. So, I mean, she's got the chops to also pull off the acting side of it, too.
Yeah, she was good. She was excellent. Very good. Amazingly, she's 26 years old when she played this part.
Yeah.
15-year-old.
She looked a little too old for the role. But particularly, it came in handy when she had to look like she's, you know, getting, when she was getting sick.
And when her hair was falling out, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, yeah. Wow.
I forgot about that.
That's one of the real bad ones. I mean, ooh.
Oh
gosh. Yeah, you know, a woman's weight, a woman's hair, these are important things and they give them up.
Yeah.
This is too much. You know, that's part of me having a hard time watching this.
I think the other thing the other thing you pointed out is the fact that the actual sequential or the time it takes for some of
timing.
These things to
timing.
The timing in terms of having the problem take place. And timing coming out of the problem, but you know you're dealing with a 100-minute movie.
Well, the thing is with this is that this is both for I have mixed feelings about it because it's a plus and it's a minus. Here, let me just describe the problem I had with credibility here. Number one, anorexia doesn't come on that quickly, but it did come on quickly in the movie because of time constraints. I understand that, but also the other end of it, getting off of it and realizing you've got a problem, and then doing something about it, that takes a long time and sometimes never happens. And these girls end up dying. So that was not in either. So, you know, that's my criticism, but I'm also thankful for that because I did not want to leave this movie not knowing if this girl was going to live or die. I was too invested. So I had the feeling by the end of it that she had at least seen the light and she was turning the ship around and she stopped going to the club and went back home and with her parents. And they even showed her having some success at eating. That is the biggest problem when you've got this disease is you just can't eat. You're making yourself sick when you eat. Your mind is battling you every step of the way. Now, they showed a little of that, but there really, in reality, is a lot of it. But I'm glad they didn't have a lot of it because I don't know if I could have taken it. I don't know if I would have, That's a bullet I can't take.
One of the things we didn't mention that is very subtle, it isn't the main theme of the movie, is it did demonstrate some of the financial pressures and that the parents felt. I mean, they were talking about going into the college savings of this girl in order to be able to pay for various things. So the financial hardship that exists. Yeah, justifying
with a scholarship.
Yeah. I would also like to point out that there is one celebrity athlete in the movie, and that is Kathy Rigby. And I don't know, Jerry, if you remember, but you know the trainer who gave the shot, the girl?
Oh,
the
woman?
That woman is Kathy Rigby, who won the first medal, one of the first medals for the U.S. way back, even before Mary Lou Retton. And what's kind of ironic, this woman, Kathy Rigby, she's obviously the little pixie just like the rest of them, she cultivated a career playing in a certain play for like ever. Peter Pan.
Oh my
god. Can you believe it? Isn't that scary?
Well, that's kind of both ironic and fitting.
It is so ironic. It's just crazy. Of course, obviously, because of her gymnastic skills, she was able to do the, they made a big deal about the flying. But when the other thing is, you think about these girls, they somewhat have a Peter Pan complex.
They don't develop. Exactly. They're androgynous. I mean, let's just say it.
Yeah.
What you don't hear and what you don't know that we got from our deep background with our sources is these girls don't have their periods.
Mm.
They're bypassing a lot of their puberty. And when your puberty gets arrested, that affects everything.
Their physical growth is not only in terms of their height. It's also in terms of the development, other things that women would expect to have, such as breasts.
Well, not just breasts, but hip size, shoulder size. This affects a lot of stuff. And, you know, we had that great episode with Dr. Yang, and we talked a lot about hormones and the effects that they have or the non-hormone. In other words, when you don't have hormones, what happens? And that's what this is, just to put a real blunt edge on it, a kind of castration for a woman.
Oh, you did put a blunt edge on it. Mm.
I did, the other C word. But you know what? It's there. And what you don't realize about hormones that I discovered when I was in college, I was actually asked to do a whole class on this in anthropology, was the difference between hormones and the nervous system. The endocrine system and the nervous system are very different. The nervous system is short term. It's about tactics. It's about moment to moment reacting to stimuli, adjusting, etc. The hormonal system is a long term system. It's slower and more pervasive, and it affects more things than the nervous system does at one time. And it's strategic. So when your hormonal system is compromised, you have much bigger problems to contend with for much longer and possibly for the rest of your life. So this is not something that was talked about in a movie. It's not something that's talked about in the news, but just use your eyeballs and watch some of that testimony or listen or look at the pictures in the testimony, and you'll see women in their 20s that don't look like they're in their 20s. And if you'll be able to see them next to normal people, they're 5 feet tall, 5 foot one. They are not big. And in this day and age, the average height of a woman is much bigger than 5 feet.
We're talking 5'5", 5'6" at least.
Yes, 5'5", 5'6" is average now. So this is, and when they're standing next to these trainers and doctors and stuff like that, the top of their head sometimes doesn't even reach the chest of the guy standing next to them. They are pixies, I'm sorry to say. And they're cute, and we all watch them, and maybe that's part of the attraction. But you know what? I have trouble watching them do some of this stuff. I mean, Jesus Christ. You know? I mean, their butts are up in the air and their legs are spread. And if you have a daughter, you don't like watching that.
No, I guess not.
Yeah. So there's a lot here that has to be unpacked. The emotions on both sides and all sides of this thing. Watching that movie was a very tough watch for me, but very informative.
I can tell you by looking at the IMDb ratings for this movie, it was pretty well received. I would say that this movie is quite often used as a film shown in classroom to demonstrate the problem. And some of the bad reviews it got were the students who felt they were subjected to having to watch it. So I would kind of discount those. But when you talk about the people that are close to the business, in terms of the gymnastics, and also people that had some experience with anorexia, those two groups felt that the movie was very, very good. And so I think it's a very good movie. I would say it's a great movie. It nets out positive. It's good. It's very accessible. So I would recommend if you're really more interested in this problem, or now that we've got in the forefront these women gymnasts, this might be something to look at.
And there'll be a link in the show notes, so just tap on it and you can watch it.
Okay.
All right. So
here we are.
Let's funnel it down. Let's funnel it down to what's happening right now, particularly the news of Larry Nassar and all this whole system. is now under a microscope today.
Yeah, I think what we've done is we've done a pretty good job of explaining some of the real challenges, some of the downsides, the price that these girls pay for their success through not only the rigorous training, which, you know, kind of obviously stunts their stunts their growth, but the insular competitive club nature. These clubs are just, they are just so isolated. They're just so structured to be with, to keep everything contained within. They're performance driven, severely competitive, and the peer pressure that we, as maybe kids in high school felt with groups, you just take it up severely, the notches on this environment, and you've got yourself a pretty big problem. So what we've done is we've say, look, we understand the problem that's out there right now that is being told to the public, and it's a big problem. But let's just think about this. What we have is we've got the Olympic Committee right now, the ones who are pounding on USA Gymnastics, and they're saying, look, if you don't do this, 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 and this, we're going to decertify you. Now, what does that mean? That means that basically you've got like 70 elite athletes are basically the victims, or the 150 women who testified are the victims. This doesn't deal with that whole 148,000, of which about half of those are women, though that group, which are still being...
Or the 5 million.
Or the 5 million. I mean, these are the culture we're talking about here doesn't just is not just at the exercise, the ranch, they call the ranch, which is the place in Texas where the Olympics gymnasts train. But we're talking about all of these women who are going into clubs, a lot of them. And some of the, and it's sort of like they're doing this, but they're not necessarily the successful ones, but they're part of the peer pressure.
Yep.
And that's got to stop.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Now, the Olympic Committee is not going to be able to solve this problem, I think, is what, you know, we've...
That's what we're saying. I mean...
We're getting there.
You know, I actually, you know, I've talked to you before about something called a consent decree. A consent decree is where you, through the judicial system, what happens is you are like the, you've done something wrong. A company's done something wrong. A local government's done something wrong. So what you do is you basically become under the auspices of another independent group that you then got to show that you've actually improved things. There's been discussion about, you know, having a dissent decree put down on USA Gymnastics. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily going to solve the problem. I think we just need to take a hard look at the culture itself. And whatever we do is we've got to make sure that we're promoting something here that is going to be pervasive. It's not going to be specifically as sensational and as heartbreaking and gut-wrenching as all of this has been. We still need to think about the population here, the whole population. I think that...
you do. And this is not something that... Just think about this for a second. This is like in high school we had cliques, of course, and every high school has them, every junior high has them, starts to have them. You know, the older kids get, and the more they become men and women as opposed to boys and girls, they fall into cliques based on their proclivities. And when John and I went to school, at our school we had cake eaters and greasers. Interesting delineation. And you know, we didn't have a formal geek culture at that time, but if we did, I think John and I would have fallen into that, probably.
Yeah, we kind of fell through the cracks a little bit.
A little bit. But, you know, everybody has a way out of that stuff. And so, for me, it was rock and roll music. Becoming a rock guy in high school made me immune to the cake eaters and the greasers. I was even approached by teachers sometimes saying, you are comfortable and popular with both groups. I need you to do something for me. You know, find my class notes. Somebody stole them. So, you know, that's the kind of thing you would also have. If you're a gymnast, you'd be immune to certain social pressures because you belong to a clique that was unassailable. I mean, you did things no one else could do. So that's the attraction partially for this, but it's also one of the detriments is that you become more and more insular. And what happens is you adapt to different norms than your peer group. And pretty soon you can't identify with your peer group. And this was highlighted in the movie. And your peer group can't identify with you. In the, right. in the movie, the boyfriend could not understand why his girlfriend couldn't come to his games and watch him. Well, she couldn't do that because she was in the process of going to the Olympics. And she couldn't communicate it. And she got frustrated with him, and he got frustrated with her. And there was just no ability to communicate because they were living in totally different worlds. And you don't really get that until you see something like that in the movie, or if your daughter is part of something like this, which our source was. And he verified that, yes, they stay little girls for way, 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 way too long. And they can communicate great with 12 and 13-year-olds, but when they're 19 and they can't talk to another 19-year-old at college, they have a problem. They have a real problem. And so that problem cannot be solved by a consent decree, having somebody come in and oversee. Like in the case of Chicago, wasn't it the Department of Justice or something, John?
Yeah, it's like the police. Yeah, the police department gets in all kinds of trouble. So all of a sudden the DOJ put down a dissent decree. Yeah, the DOJ puts a dissent decree on them.
Consent,
they've done that a couple of times with the city of Chicago. I mean, they seem to need it, I guess.
Yeah, consent. Yeah, consent decree. But anyways, that's not going to be a solution. Because just think about that for a second. How are you going to dismantle a culture or a clique? I don't think you can.
Well,
not without, you're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well,
remember,
the problem
we this is not all
is,
bad.
I don't think there's no quick solution to this, is what it boils down to.
No.
It's developing a means by which the cults can be exposed to more in terms of the other people, real life. I don't know what to say in terms of it. You can't force feed it.
No, you can't force feed it.
No, it isn't like you can't say, well, we're going to go on a field trip today. So that we're going to get away for a day from your training, but just remember, don't eat too much when you eat a popcorn or something, you know.
Yeah. I know. You're not going to be able to unravel that with an overseer. That's not going to work. So, what have we learned in the last year that would be helpful for this? And this is, we've run into this wall before, John. You know,
have we
where?
Really?
Yeah, we have, and that is where we start talking about solutions. And you know, ostensibly, we're both men, and what we like to do is fix things. And you know what?
Yes.
That's not going to happen. What happens instead is what's been happening for some years recently, and that is activism. Activism and grassroots, those will solve this problem in ways you can't imagine. Just let's take our history now. The 1% thing, remember the 1% protest that started in New York City in the park? It was made a lot of fun of because there were no leaders. There was no singular message. They were just kind of making it up, it seemed like. And they got a lot of flack on the news and what have you, and they weren't taken seriously. But till this day, that phrase, the 1%, is still with us. And they made their mark, and it caused activism. And it caused attention to come to income inequality and the stunting of the middle class wages. So that was fruitful. And the Me Too movement, another great example. That's not something that's organized from the top. There's not a single spokesperson for this. You know, as eloquent as Oprah is, she's not the singular person for this. And that's not how the problem's getting solved. Problem's getting solved because it's being talked about and women are banding together and they're doing something about it. That election in Alabama, everybody's wringing their hands and they were looking for the Republican National Committee, the RNC, to do something about it. Well, they're not going to do anything about it. They didn't do anything about it. They backed the guy. And they were thinking, well, the women can't possibly stand for this, especially the evangelical women. Guess what? The evangelical women backed the guy, creepy as he is. They use Bible verses about you know, Lot and his daughters and all kinds of terrible stuff and to justify it. So that's not going to do it. You're not going to get a top-down solution to that problem. But what happened in Alabama? Judge Roy Bean, or whatever his name was. I'm mangling his name on purpose.
I think he's riding his horse into the sunset, isn't he?
Backwards. He sure is. He sure is. And so it worked. What worked? Millions of women stood up, raised their fists, and screamed. and particularly the black women, all went out to vote. And if someone couldn't make it there, they got a ride. And no one said, do this. It just happened. And that's what's going to happen here. And we've already seen it. 150 women allocated at Larry Nassar's trial for four, maybe almost 5 days. That's unheard of. But boy, did that leave a mark. And you should read some of the things these girls said. They're not girls anymore. They're all women. You should read some of the things they said. And one of them, and some of them were threatening, and pointed right at Nassar and said, we're not only taking you down, but we're going after everybody who let you do this. And they were very unequivocal, and they are not going to let up. And those 150 women may sound like a small number, but it trickles down. We've learned this, haven't we?
Yeah, we sure have. And I do believe that this is going to be, it's the severity of this case and the enormity in terms of the amount of evidence and the fact that it went on for so long are all factors that are going to make people open their eyes as they listen to these women and take it very seriously and moving it, and it'll continue to have legs. Just like the
Yes.
It's an extension of the Me Too movement. There are so many
A lot of them cited the Me Too movement during their allocution.
Yes. It's an extension of that, and we're going to find, I think, in the future that there are going to be so many more. You know, this is not a Hollywood problem. This isn't a government. This isn't a Washington D.C. government problem. This
nope.
isn't a corporate problem. This is a problem that extends far beyond that, and we're just beginning to learn. Here is another one, and we're going to find more in months, years to come. Unfortunately.
Yeah, this will get unpacked, and it's going to get ugly, but you know it's going to get real too, and things are going to happen. So I am both horrified and shocked, being a parent of a little girl. I mean, I was at the birth of both of my children, and I held them. I was the first one to hold them, cut some umbilical cords, and Ooh. You don't forget that. You do not forget that, and it stays with you the rest of your life. And you will always see your child as a helpless little baby.
Well,
and
I'm the exception to the rule. You know why? I don't have an umbilical cord.
My brother John has no navel, I'm proud to say. He's just like Jesus.
I'm sorry. Oh, dear. That I think you the dots you tried to connect are way, way too far apart here. But
maybe.
I appreciate the,
if the dots are navels, then they're really. We got to lighten up a little bit.
That's a problem. When you have something this serious, you've eventually got to kind of. It might sound inappropriate, but you got to lighten it up a little bit. So
you do it, so you can take a breath and go back to it. And you know, I know these women are serious, and they should be serious. I hope they don't. Here's what I'll tell you. One thing I thought of, John, that I hadn't mentioned yet. One thing I thought of as I watched this and I read the testimony, the allocutions. One thing that really occurred to me was, you know, there's been a little sliding backwards on Me Too, where some women have gone, hey, you know, let's not get so carried away that we're never able to date a man again or even have a dinner. You know, not all men are monsters. You know, and so we started to slide into a slightly gray area there. And I just don't think that women can afford that to happen. And this, I believe, brought the focus back again. And you know, what you have to realize is there's a relationship between these edge cases. And okay, 150 is not a big number. Okay, fine. But you know what? These edge cases help us understand general populations much better. You cannot watch the movie about Temple Grandin and her autism without saying, I have a little of that too. And it helps you understand yourself and your day-to-day living by watching what she went through. You know, our episode we did on castration seemed extreme and dealt with a very small group of people. But it helps you understand the general population much more, and the role of hormones and the lack of hormones and the difference in people and the transgender movement and all kinds of other things. So it's the same with this, is that watching these women put their fists in the air and point their finger at Larry Nassar and say never again is what we need. It's strong medicine and it tastes bad, but you know what? We got to do it. Got to do it. And there's not going to be any silver bullet, and there's not going to be any hero that rides in on a horse and saves everybody. It's just going to be hard work and activism.
Well, I just hope that they, like we've already pointed out, that they look at the big problem, because what you're saying is what we're seeing is the tip of the iceberg here, and what we got to do is we got to deal with the pervasive problem, and it's not going to be a quick fix like the Olympic Committee is doing, you know, just to kind of to keep things moving, because let's face it, we're win at all cost society, unfortunately.
We are. Yeah, we are. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with winning and competing. And let's face it, our whole culture is rife with it. We're a capitalist society, after all. And so
there's also nothing wrong with losing and competing.
That's correct. And because baseball is over 50% failure.
Yeah, it's like if you're successful, you fail 7 out of 10 times and you're a successful hitter.
That's correct. That's correct. Something to think about. All right, John. Well, okay. You know what? You're at Starbucks,
right?
And John's ritual is he usually doesn't eat breakfast before podcast, so now he gets to go do that. How was the coffee, by the way?
Coffee's good.
How was the coffee?
You know, I get the regular. I'm not what you call a coffee snob. So.
Oh,
but it's all
really?
Good.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I guess I am a little bit. Yeah.
Maybe.
Hated that.
Hey. It all depends on what you're comparing yourself to. This will be great. Have yourself a great breakfast, John. And
thank you
very much for your time.
Okay, sounds good. I'll see you in the flip-flop.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.